Well, that little news story there about the IRS being on time with tax season this year makes my life a little bit easier come next month in March and April. Remember, what, 2 years ago or so, or maybe it was even last year, I forget. We could file them, but they sat in a queue until the end of February or something. They just sat there. I'm glad Congress finally got this tax extender thing out of the way, so now we at least know what we can do this year. But that's another life altogether. Happy New Year! Can you believe it is 2015? I mean, if you're my age, you're still wondering where 2010 went. And the few years in between, you're just, you know, oh man. But 2015's here. I'll say this, 2015 is going to be a great year here on the show, and I hope you'll be a part of it. So welcome to the first Saturday of the new year on Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name is Roger Metz, and I hope everyone had a safe and wonderful holiday season. And everybody's just looking forward to going back to work in the morning, aren't they? If you're a duck hunter, you love this rain out here. I mean, I don't like driving in it, but boy, I tell you, because all this rain is going to run into the lakes. It's going to back them up into areas that haven't been flooded before. All your potholes are going to get refreshed. It's going to float a lot of seed and things that ducks eat. And if you've looked at the weather lately, you have winter storm Frona that is sweeping across the Midwest and the Northeast. Check out temperatures in Raleigh, North Carolina, and Virginia. Even now, they're in the 20s and 30s, which means you're going to have a push of birds come down first of the week. And you look at the weather for South Carolina, Tuesday, Wednesday, you got some winds that are up. It's going to be clear. I don't necessarily like clear days, but hey, I'll take the wind and the cold. So Tuesday, Wednesday, if you're looking for me early in the morning, you're probably not going to find me. I know a 10-year-old little girl is going, take me, take me, take me. No, you have schoolwork to do, young lady. It's a benefit at times, but it's also a curse at times with homeschooling, is that, you know, anytime you go somewhere, if one of your kids likes to do what you want to do, they think they can go too just because they don't have to go to regular school. So no, Taylor, you have schoolwork to do. It'll be just me and the dog. I'll take you again this year, I promise. It's going to be cold. You remember how cold you were last time? It's going to be even colder this time. So if you're a duck hunter, you love this rain, take advantage of it this week. Next weekend, it'll still be good. Before I get into anything else, there's a little news story here from Department of Natural Resources that I want to pass along to you. If you've never done this, or you've never had any exposure to it, let your Christmas trees benefit fish and wildlife after the holidays. I know a lot of us have the artificial trees just because we got tired of going looking for a good real tree. But anyway, if you have a real tree, instead of letting it just take up space in a landfill, Department of Natural Resources officials suggest giving it a second life by putting it to good use for fish or wildlife. You know, if you're, now obviously you can't do this in a subdivision, but if you're out in a rural area, discarded Christmas trees, great for erosion control, brush piles to provide nesting and escape cover for animals like rabbits, quail. And in addition to benefiting small game such as rabbits and quail, brush piles constructed of Christmas trees can help birds such as sparrows, towhees, and wrens. We're getting to the time of year when the leaves have dropped and the landscape is more open. However, cover is still a vital part of a healthy wildlife habitat. That's Tommy Wachter, wildlife biologist with the DNR, based in Clemson. He says, although the needles of old Christmas trees will brown and fall off in 2 or 3 months, if you get enough trees piled up, they'll make pretty good cover. Brush piles are usually mounds or teepee-shaped. You give them a little, that way they don't lay flat on the ground. Gives them room to run up underneath. And, of course, your bases are down. Fisheries biologist with the Department of Natural Resources use discarded Christmas trees to maintain many fish attractor sites. If you've ever been out on a lot of the lakes in South Carolina, you'll see the white buoys. They've got the orange rectangle on it and, you know, has a little fish with a fish hook. Says this is a fish attractor. And what they do is they take those Christmas trees and drop them beside those buoys. And you can go there and it gives bait fish and aquatic insects surface area to live and grow. And they turn into small fish and are fed up on by larger fish. So don't throw the trees out. There are several collection areas around. I know you can contact the Clemson Extension Office in your town or your county and find out where to take them. You can also contact Department of Natural Resources. So put that Christmas tree back to use for the benefit of wildlife after you've enjoyed it during this Christmas season, and the wildlife appreciates it, I'm sure. Okay, how many of you got something outdoorsy for Christmas? I'll tell you what. We'll go on with this one. I was going to do the calendar. The calendar events is kind of small this week, but we'll go on with this one. Did anybody get a pair of binoculars? I got several calls and had people ask about which binoculars should you get, what are the best magnifications or objective lenses and all. I tried to do the best I could. I even called my brother. My brother's an expert on optics. And so I even called him and I said, okay, what does an average person need for South Carolina just to be able to view whatever they're looking at? I mean, we go out west, you want a little bit more magnification simply because your distances are further. So I actually called him and got his opinion on some. And I hope if you got them for Christmas, I hope you put them to use. The pair at my house stays on the back little coffee table beside the back door. But how about hiking boots, fishing rods, one of those camping hammocks, maybe a new gun or bow? They're all great gifts, but now it's up to you to get out there and put them to use. And I'm going to do my best to help you find things to do and places to go that you'll be able to use those. I guess if I had one piece of advice for you that would apply to all things, it's to be safe. In other words, take some time to Google an article on gun safety or buy a book on outdoor survival, being prepared, that would or something that would apply to using what you got. Because the number one goal of any outdoor adventure is to come home safely. Now, whether you're brand new to the outdoors or a weathered veteran, we all need to be prepared when we head off to the woods and the water. And I think this is, I'm going to change it up a little bit. I'm going to go ahead and do the calendar events. There's just a few of them on there. And then I'll get back to what I was going to say earlier. There's two waterfall excursions, both at Table Rock State Park, January the 10th and January the 31st. The registration deadline, this is call as early as spots are very limited. There is a small fee, and these are really built around staying at the state park, either in the lodges that they have there or camping. You can go to the state park website, or you can go to Visit Pickens County. They also have a nice write-up to it. It's a winter waterfall tour with cabin lodging at Table Rock State Park. Check in your cabin on Friday. On Saturday, depart for a ranger-led upstate waterfall tour. First stop, Ravencliff Falls. A moderately difficult 4.4-mile round-trip trail leads to an overlook across the gorge from the falls. Stop for lunch at Caesar's Head State Park and enjoy the view. Next to Wildcat Wayside Falls, where you will see two sets of falls on an easy one-mile hike. Then off to Twin Falls for an easy half-mile round-trip hike before heading back to Table Rock State Park by late afternoon. Check out of your cabins on 1 o'clock. Check out of your cabin on Sunday. Reservations, 864-878-9813. Or email at tablerock@scprt.com. So anyway, that's two weekends, the 10th and the 31st. $200 per person single or $125 per person double. And like I said, there's also camping available. One event that I ran across is pretty interesting, the South Carolina Agribiz and Farm Expo. And you think, now why is he talking about Agribiz and Farm Expo on an outdoor hunting radio fishing show? It's really interesting. It's over in Florence, South Carolina. It's Wednesday, January 14th and Thursday, January the 15th. It says the South Carolina Agribiz and Farm Expo has been established to serve as an umbrella event for all aspects of agriculture and agribusiness. The educational agenda includes a precision agricultural session, one on cover crops and soil health, two mini conferences, one for small business, small farmers on Thursday, agritourism on Wednesday, and educational sessions are included in the admission fee of $5. Cheap entertainment. I was interested because the target audience, the general public, students, and faculty. So you can go to the Clemson Extension office, look into any calendar for your county. It shows up. It's also on SCI Way website for South Carolina. I've got one more. I'll get to it on the other side of the break. Hang on, stay dry, and we'll be back on the other side. Yeah. All right. Here's a little bit of useless trivia for you. Do you know what Back to the Future movie, when they went into the future, do you know what year they went to? 2015. Back to the Future 2. That's courtesy of my wife. She came in this morning. She goes, oh, did you know? And sure enough, I looked it up. They October the 21st, 2015. That was, what, 1989, I think, Back to the Future. So thanks to Huey Lewis and the News. They had some good music on those movies. Back to the Agribusiness Farm Expo. You know, we're losing contact with the young people in the state with the heritage of South Carolina farm and where things actually come from. That's why it's on this calendar of events. I think it's important to keep kids and shoot for that matter, even adults, tied to that. You know, that boneless chicken breast in Bilo doesn't come that way, essentially. So, educational. That's the reason it's on here. If you like to fish, there is a great tournament series here in South Carolina. Actually, it's gotten really big. It's the Fishers of Men Tournament Series. I was looking at their calendar of events. They have the South Carolina Upstate Team Division. Their opener is January 31st on Lake Kiwi. Friday night meeting is at Marathon Pickens Church. Tournament be Saturday 31st out of Gap Hill Landing, Lake Kiwi. If you go to their website, they have all sorts of information because there's paybacks, there's bass boat manufacturer reward programs like Skeeter. There's a Palmetto Boat Center is doing some matching bonus to win type thing if you purchase a boat from Palmetto Boat Center. So go to their website. It's a great tournament series. I think they have five tournaments here in South Carolina in this division. They're all and they're really good guys to deal with. So anyway, like I said, the calendar's kind of thin right now. It's getting fuller. The further I look out, the more websites I go to and look at. So stay tuned for more ways to get outdoors. I wanted to go and talk about something that I really shouldn't because I'm horrible at it. In fact, I'm probably worse than horrible at it. I shouldn't even do them. That way I'm not disappointed at the end of the year. New Year's resolutions. Do any of you still make them? Like I said, I got a dismal record. So do most of the people I know of. But hey, now I have all of you people out there to either hold me accountable, or I can use as inspiration to do one this year. So I've already put a Day of Reckoning segment on the calendar for December the 19th show. So stay tuned. And if you made one about the outdoors, then follow through with it and we can talk about who did what and kept what and what we're going to do next year. But I'll tell you if two of the ones I made this year, and I think I decided just to do one or two and follow through with them. One I do every year. The first one's to be a better dad. If you have kids, you know that it's a job that changes every day. And if you know me, you know I do not like change. Seriously, I don't like change. It's one of my, every year I look back and every year I come up short. But I figure as long as I'm trying something, that I'm doing something better than I would if I didn't try at all. You know, maybe every year I get a little better at handling the change. People around my house call that dad's mellowing out a little bit. That could be an age thing too, but you know, you got to try something. So this is one I put on there every year, and I'll look back on that on my own time. But one that I want to challenge everybody out there to do, and it's a tough one to keep, and that's keep a journal. And I'm not talking about one on the computer. I'm talking about one in a paper book that requires a pen or a pencil. Some of you are saying, I'm sure you with young kids, because I drive this show based on kids. They're sitting there going, now, why do I want to keep a journal when right now all I'm planning on doing is taking my four-year out to the backyard and camping? Okay, maybe you're off the hook for a whole year of a journal, but I bet there are at least a dozen entries in just one backyard camp out. You know, they're test sessions where you go out and stay until it gets dark. They're trips to the store for snap lights and bug spray. Trip to the grocery store for hot dogs and all the stuff to make s'mores. We had s'mores last night in the fireplace. My girls have friends over. They all want to do s'mores in the fireplace. So I have eaten more s'mores in the last 3 months than I did in the last 10 years probably. But, you know, then there's the actual camp out. Yeah, here's one for you. Maybe an hourly entry based on how much or how little sleep you get. You know, then there are posts or entries for the post camp out for plans to make the next one better. Hey, let your 4-year-old dictate or write things they think are important that they remembered. What you write down is totally up to you, but think about the laughter and memories you'll be able to share down the road when that 4-year-old leaves for college, or better yet, has a 4-year-old of their own and wants to do their own first backyard camp out. I got about a dozen journals in a desk drawer at home that have from none to maybe a dozen entries in them. That's sad for several reasons. The first is I'm still not disciplined enough to make those daily entries. Second, I don't remember all those little things that at the time I thought would last a lifetime. They haven't. And last, the great memories I do have would be twice as rich if I could read them in all the detail and flavor that was there at the end of the specific day. I do have a couple of journals from several trips out west. Of course, when you're riding straight through and riding straight back and you have nothing else to do but watch a campfire at night, you tend to be able to keep up with a journal. But think of what I'd have if I had 20 years worth of my time outdoors right here at home. And journals are for everyone. It doesn't matter if you're an avid hiker writing about the view from a ridgetop, a fisherman writing about the one that got away, a hunter writing about the woods waking up on a cold morning, or a mom watching her kids play out in the rain. You know, those memories will fade with time unless you take a few minutes that day to write them down. Hope 2015 will give me a couple of entries that I can share with you next December. One more that I do a fairly good job of keeping. It's been about 5 years now when I started doing this. But I take a lot of pictures. I look through the folder that I put all the pictures through for just things I do with this show, and it was 7,618 pictures. I'm never going to print 7,618 pictures. How many of us never print a single picture? So about 5 years ago, I started buying a frame, and you can find them at Hobby Lobby. They're fairly cheap if you get a 50% off day. It has, you know, room for 8 to 10 4x6 or 3x5 pictures. And I'll go through the pictures from that year, pick out enough pictures to fill up that frame, kind of like a highlight reel, if you will. I hang them up in my office, and, you know, it's fun to look back now at about 5 years with the highlights. I also started buying a photo album and printing however many pictures that I need to fill that up, too. Like I said, I'll never be able to print all those pictures, but at least I have a few that I can put my hands on and look at instead of buying just another SD card. Just a suggestion. To those of you out there that called in and collected a little present from the show last month, I'd appreciate a picture or two for a woods and water highlight picture frame of whoever of you or whoever ended up with whatever you won from my scrapbook. You can send those to Roger at woodsandwatersc.com. We already did the calendar. Forgot to mention, wow, it's already 24 after and I'm just getting to this because I skipped it up front. You can find this show here at 94.5 WGTK on your FM dial. Download the free Conservative Talk 94.5 WGTK app or go to the station website, Conservative Talk 94.5, and click on the Listen Live link on the right side of the page. You can find this show with a weekly calendar of events, pictures, videos, and whatever else I put up there on Facebook at facebook.com/woodsandwatersc. Tag your pictures on Instagram at #woodsandwatersc radio. And you can see more and listen to the weekly podcast on the website, woodsandwatersc.com. The numbers, if you want to call in today, 877-235-9405. Wow, things go fast when you're having fun. The calendar, of course, I'll put it on the Facebook page. I'm rolling out kind of a new look for that post. I'll have the event, date, location, and a website link for each one. And I do that so you can click those links, check those events a few days before you plan to go just to make sure there haven't been any last-minute changes. I need to say, I know I said at the end of last year, I said a little word about sponsors. I need to say a little bit about sponsors on this show since it's the first one of the year. Last year, I had 10 sponsors. This year, 8 of them are back with me. The other two I'm going to talk to this week. Just incredible. They will never know how much I appreciate them. They will never know, no matter how much you tell them. So the only way they know is if you tell them. And once we get them all nailed down, the original ones, I'll let you know. We're in the process of adding some new ones that are really exciting. I'll bring you up to speed on those as they come through. But my sponsors, and you know who you are, I really appreciate it. And we'll get you, you'll start hearing their ads on the radio. When you hear their ads and you hear me say, and tell them Woods and Water South Carolina sent you, tell them. Even if you don't buy anything, even if you just stop in the door and say, hey, look, I appreciate the radio show you're sponsoring, let them know. That's the only way they know that them sponsoring this radio show is doing any good. Deer season is over. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of glad. Two things. It was a tough year. I did nothing to prepare for deer season this year. I didn't go look at a tree stand. I didn't plant one single food plot, and it showed. Yeah, I finally put one in the freezer. What would this be? Wednesday night, the 31st? Or Wednesday morning, actually. It was a wonderful day. I sat there for 4 hours before those deer ever came out. I got to stand about 6:30. They came out at 10:30. Just a rough season. I'm glad it's over, mainly so I can put everything up. My office has been a wreck because of all the hunting things coming in and out of the door. I still got all my hunting decoy, duck hunting stuff, the decoys, the waders, all that's still hanging around. But at least I get to have the clutter in my office. Next year's going to be different. There's a lot of change coming to the way we deer hunt. At the farm, we're cutting trees. We're going to have to do a lot of work to get the habitat or the place cleaned up. And it's going to change the way the deer move. And we're going to have a lot of work. We're going to have to learn how to hunt again next year. I told my brother it's going to be tough for a couple of old guys to relearn how to deer hunt rather than just going to the pretty places we like to sit. The deer don't necessarily go there anymore. But it's going to be different next year. I don't know. I was talking to the processor when I was there, and a couple of things that were really interesting talking to them. Their overall numbers were down. And if you talk to many deer hunters across the state, they'll tell you, okay, 75% of them will tell you they saw the same thing. You know, numbers were down. The processor also said the size was down. Now, if you listen back to this show this year, you know we did a segment with, or actually a show with Dr. Kilgo from down at the SRS, Savannah Riverside, where he was talking about the coyote studies they've done. And, you know, they were seeing anywhere from 70 to 80% predation on fawns due to coyotes. So, which tells me two things. You know, the coyotes are affecting our deer population. It's down, no doubt about it. I did not see near the deer I saw, even without having done anything. Some of the places I hunt are bottlenecks. The deer were just not there this year. I was still seeing a few, but not near what I saw before. And if hunters are shooting the smaller deer this year, then we're really going to pay for this down the road. We're going to do a lot more this year about the deer. We're going to have quality deer management people on with us, hopefully get to Dr. Grant Woods on the show with us. If you were around Greenville in the 80s when QDMA started up, he was like the up-and-comer. I saw him at the convention last year. We're both a lot older and grayer. We're going to do a lot more informative stuff for the deer hunters. So stay tuned. And I think changes are coming through the DNR. We're going to have to police ourselves a lot more than we have been in the past because we're the non-nature aspect of deer hunting. So hang on, we'll be back. I'm going to talk to some ducks on the other side. And welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. If you want to call on the show, numbers 235-9405, 877-235-9405. It doesn't matter what you want to talk about. If it's outdoors related, we'll talk about it. I've got a lot of information. I always come with more than I need. Don't get to half of it, but I love to talk about what you want to talk about. So give the show a call if you'd like to. Welcome those callers. I was talking about deer season. I think next year I do think we're going to see some more changes coming from the Department of Natural Resources. You don't know how fast the General Assembly is going to move on any of their recommendations, but I think it's going to be up to us to really look at the impact we're having on the deer herd. You know, shelter those does because we're going to need those more than ever. And basically, you know, self-govern ourselves for a while because I think the coyote problem is here to stay. I don't think that's going to be something that goes away. no matter how much we shoot or trap. And I got to give kudos to my brother. He whacked one the other day. And of the two, he picked the female. I was real proud of him for that. One less litter of puppies that'll be wearing out the deer population this spring. I still have not seen one in the woods. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I just have never seen them. Now, let me tell you what. I canoe across a lake to get to my deer stand. And I was coming back across the lake one night, and those things started howling behind me. And you talk about make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. If I'd have been a braver man, I'd have gone back and gotten them. But not me. I'm a chicken at heart. But anyway, you know, shoot the ones. I know one thing we've talked about doing this year is getting us a predator call and making some trips to where we deer hunt and trying to take out some of those coyotes, because they're here. We're going to have to take more of a protective role and get rid of as many as we can. It's raining outside. I'm glad I have partially webbed feet from all the duck hunting that I do. Duck hunting is one of those things that's, I don't know, it's, give me a day where it's low clouds, rainy, cold, and I'm just happy as a tick. I don't know. It's a real character flaw. But anyway, I'm gonna give you a little story and then read a few things. But sitting in the deer stand the last couple of times I went, young man on the other side of the lake, I couldn't figure out whether it was deer hunting or duck hunting. At first, I thought it was deer hunting until I heard the duck calls. And to be honest with you, it was all I could do to keep from getting out of the stand and going over there and saying, look, just quit calling. Just quit blowing that thing. It's horrible. You're not getting anywhere. You don't know what you're doing. Quit duck hunting. Just, you know, it drove me nuts. And then I remember what I was like when I first started duck hunting. You know, first time I ever got in a duck blind with a guide, he took my call away from me. He wouldn't let me blow it. So I did something. I texted the young man. I said, is this still so-and-so? He said, yeah. I said, look, so why don't the next time we get some fresh birds coming through, so why don't I give you a call and we'll go duck hunt together? His text back to me, I tell you what, I'm going to find this, because it was, you know, you wonder a lot of times when you kind of offer yourself or try to help somebody. You know, you get some people that say, oh, leave me alone, I know what I'm doing, and that sort of thing. And I was, after I got this back, I felt really bad about what I'd thought. Because it says, okay, that sounds good, because I have absolutely no clue what I'm doing. And I got that text, and I was like, yeah, don't you really feel bad now? Here's a kid who's, you know, he doesn't know, he doesn't think he knows at all. You offer to help him, and he jumps at it. So here in the next few weeks, I'm gonna take him duck hunting. Now, granted, I'm not kin to any of the Duck Dynasty people. So my calling at times can be bad. Luckily, I played trumpet all the way through middle school, high school. So I do have the air lung capacity to blow a duck call pretty good. It's taken me years to get the calls down. And most of the time, you don't call. But I'm going to take him. I'm going to, you know, at least try to teach him the basics. I'm not going to come off as knowing everything, and none of us should. But be careful how you perceive that younger generation. You know, they're the next ones coming along behind us. You know, take a shot. You never know what kind of reaction you're going to get. So, anyway, in case you are a duck hunter, a new duck hunter, maybe an old duck hunter, maybe you're thoroughly disgusted with duck hunting, here's 10 great tips for duck hunting by Joe Balog at Realtree. And it starts, maybe you're just a weekend waterfowler, warrior. Maybe you sleep in your face paint and refuse to shave for duration of the 60-day season. Either way, when you go hunting, you want to take more ducks. And we're here to help with that. So he gives us 10 little things about duck hunting. Number one, be a naturalist. You know, many hunters spend plenty of time hunting ducks, but little time observing them. Some of the best hunters and fishermen I know have spent as much time studying their quarry as they have pursuing it. To be able to recognize patterns and behavior, it's important to understand why ducks do what they do. You start with food sources. Learn what aquatic invertebrates are important to waterfowl. Make note of when food preferences shift to grains and seeds. Learn to distinguish between field crops. Identify water depths favored by diver ducks. All of these things can be used to later predict what waterfowl will be doing when it's time to hunt them, making it easier to choose the right location. Other times, breeding behavior may dictate calling or decoy strategies. As plumage changes in the fall, so should decoy spreads. Ducks and geese are fascinating animals. Learning more about them is fun and will make you a better hunter. And one of the best things you can do is do a little research on waterfowl migration. It will blow your mind how ducks migrate like they do lots of times at night. You know, they've done studies that a hen duck, when she was hatched in a certain area of the prairie potholes or Canada, that's where she's going to go back to. Now, you tell me how she knows to go back to that one spot. Second one, match your decoys to the ducks. Many hunters use mallard decoys all the time. And granted, mallards are the easiest to find, the cheapest, and they're the most sociable ducks out there, so most ducks like mallards. Then they're never wrong. But day in, day out, do you see more mallards or do you see other species? You know, ducks have great eyesight, so a spread of all mallards when no mallards are around looks fake. If you're hunting wood ducks and teal early in the season, and then gadwalls, pintails, and blacks, later on, invest in decoys. Don't be afraid to make mallards the minority in your spread. And there's another thing that you will figure out if you observe ducks. And one of the best things to do, as far as that goes, after the season goes out, when that migration is headed back north, go watch them. Take pictures. It's a learning experience. Stress concealment. On days when everything goes right and the ducks are falling out of the sky and right into your decoy spread, it seems you could sit in the lawn chair with blue jeans and shoot a limit. Those days, especially if you're in South Carolina, are few and far between. As ducks migrate each fall, they stop in predictable areas where they're easy to hunt. New ducks, like what we're going to get this week, I think, as they're called, quickly become stale ducks after a few days of hunting. And once educated, stale ducks are very leery of decoys and flaws in concealment. They are also very leery of calls. For that reason, hunters should go the extra mile with face paint, full camo, concealing cover, and a low profile. Ducks are worse than deer when it comes to that. Get away from the boat. One thing that has dramatically helped my hunting over the last 5 years has been keeping a good distance from the boat. Although I camouflage it well, it's much easier to hide a hunter and a dog than an entire 14-foot rig. In areas where hunting out of the boat is necessary, be sure to use camouflage pattern that match the area surrounding from above. In most cases, tans and browns. And you can get that woven palm leaf made by Avery, 4x4 sheets. Great stuff. Be a good shotgunner. Shotgunning is an art form, much different than the deliberate aiming of a rifle or a handgun. To be a good shotgunner, a waterfowler must understand that the purpose is to spread a moving pattern of shot in the same area as a moving target, timing it is so they both end up in the same place at the same time. If you've never done this, it's kind of fun. Think of it like spraying the dog, or if you don't have a dog, use one of your kids, with a water hose as he runs across the backyard. It's amazing. It's a really teachable experiment, too. Visualize the shot as a moving spray that you sweep through the target. Do it with a fluid motion, both eyes open. That's important when it comes to shotgunning. Spend any amount of time listening to ducks in a major refuge, and it becomes apparent that they all don't sound the same. Some are high and squeaky, others low and raspy. Some do a 5-note cadence. Others do 7 or 8 notes, maybe just quack a lot. For this reason, it is far more important to know when to call ducks than how. A good caller who calls to ducks at the right time can often turn them with the worst-sounding call on the market. The key is to always call to ducks when they appear to be leaving the area. As they approach, quack or feed call at most. Once they seem to be leaving or on the corners, as experienced callers term it, bring them back with a 5-note cadence, often called a comeback call. Resist overcalling and just trying to get one bird out of the bunch to turn your way. He'll bring the West with him. And that's the truth. You can make one call and watch a duck and his reaction, and you'll know whether to put the call down because he's not coming in. Tactic Taylor, the week of Thanksgiving, we had a group of 20 or 30 mallards come over. Very rarely does that happen, and very even more rarely is it when I can pull those birds down. But I did, and I felt like a, wow, boy, I'm good. but I'm not really good. There's a couple more here. I'll get to them on the other side of the break. Stay with me. And welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. We're talking 10. Go back to the title here. I can reference the author again. Come on, computer. Go back up here. 10 great tips for duck hunting off the Realtree website. Going on, pay attention to tiny details. He said, once I had an entire morning hunt go sour because my stainless steel broke prop was slightly visible above the water. To the ducks, it looked like a neon sign flashing, don't come in here. Sometimes the smallest details can make an extraordinary difference. When ducks refuse to sit down in the shooting hole of your decoy spread, switch things up. Move decoys around. Change the shape of the formation. Check and recheck the look of your blind or setup, and that's an important thing. If ducks continue to shy away, to turn out, I mean, you may call them and they may start coming in, and they get in and they leave. Once they see where you're calling from, get out of the blind. Walk out a little ways and look at it. Circle it, looking for something that looks bad. Another often overlooked variable, sun angle and shadows. I don't like hunting on sunny days. Just seems to make it harder. Boat shadows look unnatural in an otherwise natural setting. Many hunters continue to hunt the same way when ducks won't cooperate, thinking that the next bunch is sure to come in. Yet the ducks will, more often than not, continue to work the same way. Ducks and geese are actually predictable as they respond and react to the natural conditions as Mother Nature dictates. Unlike humans, they don't think things over, have an agenda, respond and react to the reactions, and get in tune. Try new things. And this one, I mean, he talks a little bit about field hunting here. The first person to wave a flag at a goose. You know, I never would have waved a flag at a goose. I'm going to stay, you know, as still as I can and try not to look up too much. But it says in waterfowling, everything we do is variable depending on the mood of the game. And somewhere, somebody once initially tried everything we think of today as a proven system. Learning to duck hunt on my own without a mentor or teacher has taught me some important lessons that others may overlook. When things get slow, walk around the decoy spread. The muddy water is highly visible to ducks flying far overhead. It's something I see few hunters in my part of the country do, but it's incredibly effective. And I learned it just by being observant and willing to try new things. And that's the truth. When you put out decoys in the morning, if it's shallow enough to walk, don't throw them. Get out and walk them out there, because what it looks like is it looks like ducks who have been paddling around or feeding on the bottom. Be amazed, little things like that, how much difference it makes. He goes on, do what works for you. He talks about spinning wing decoys. I don't use them anymore. I had one for maybe 2 years, and I don't know. I just didn't like it. It was a hassle, you know, dead batteries, losing screws that needed attached wings. And I said, it's got to be more fun if it's easier to do. I haven't missed them. I really haven't. But at the end, it says, develop your own system. It's far better to learn from what you've experienced and found out in your personal hunts than to take recommendations from others. Personal experience is more powerful than boat ramp mornings. And the last one in here, which I think is a great one, is keep a journal. Sometimes wish I had a personal journalist with me, like the adventures and explorers of yesteryear. Think of what we could all learn from ourselves if we recorded everything that happened and relied less on our often distorted memory. In any case, over the past several years, I've kept detailed records of every hunt, and nothing has been more valuable of a hunting tool than those journals. It's not an easy thing to do. It takes a lot of discipline, and even most dedicated hunters often struggle for time for today's busy world. But by simply recording predominant weather and wind, as well as other details learned each day, a predictable pattern begins to emerge that is the best piece of equipment a waterfowl hunter will ever own. Each year, keeping such journals will equate to more ducks on the strap. Bottom line. So just a few things for you duck hunters out there. It's a great time of the year. It's, you know, I enjoy when deer season comes in. I like it when it goes out because I know I've got another month that I can get out there and enjoy being outdoors, and something about interacting with those ducks. It is fun. If you've never tried it, don't. It's too expensive. There's too many of us out there. You'll never learn. No, I can't tell you that. It's a great thing to have, to be a part of, and that's waterfowling. You see so many things. Okay, Outdoor Wire. This is not what you want to read. Springfield, Illinois. An Illinois conservation police investigation into the Wired Arrow Outdoors television show has resulted in the company's owners, pro staff members, and guests being charged with 134 wildlife violations, including the taking of 18 deer illegally in Illinois. These shows aired on the Sportsman Channel, uploaded to YouTube, and the police looked at them, determined that hunting and filming were conducted on properties in the Chicago region without permission from landowners, making any hunting permits invalid. It's amazing. You wonder, in today's atmosphere with hunting and all the hunting shows, if this is a result of just wanting better ratings. I mean, they kill some huge deer, but they're going to pay for it. It goes on the list, all the... And I like this quote. Hunting is a great privilege to be cherished and respected, said IDNR Director Mark Miller. Those who violate laws intended to protect Illinois wildlife resources and take game illegally will face the full consequences of the law. And it lists them all in here. And then it lists what it, you know, a 10-point buck they seized, another 10-point buck, 8-point, 10-point, 8-point, 12-point, 8-point. 12-point was a Boone and Crockett whitetail. And a turkey. You know, and often, I'm sure they were doing it for the show and to get more viewers and have a better show. And even around here, you wonder, you know, my wife saw a deer the other day on the side of the road, had its head removed. I mean, if you do that, what's the story you're trying to tell? And you got to remember that lie every time you tell it. More news. This is all FoxNews.com. I saw this and was kind of interested in it. Court rules against environmentalists seeking EPA regulations for lead bullets. In migratory waterfowl hunting, we have to use non-toxic shot because there were some studies done that ducks and geese were picking up lead shot, thinking it was seed, ingesting it, and you had lead poisoning. Agree or disagree, that's just where we are. This was a good one. A federal appeals court has ruled against environmentalists who are trying to force the EPA to regulate spent lead bullets and lead shot used in hunting and shooting sports. And this applies not only to hunters, but to you paper punchers out there, clay target busters, all of us involved in this, it would affect us all. In a decision favorable to gun enthusiasts, the U.S. District Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia said Tuesday that environmental groups had suggested no way in which EPA could regulate spent bullets and shot without also regulating cartridges and shells. A quote that came out of this, given that bullets and shot can become spent only if they are first contained in a cartridge or shell and then fired from a weapon, the environmental groups have identified no way in which the EPA could regulate spent bullets and shot without also regulating cartridges and shells, precisely what the law prohibits, said the appeals court judge, a Bill Clinton nominee. So it's, you know, we dodged a bullet there. Thankfully, we got a judge that, you know, can understand common sense. I was looking here. The EPA banned lead-based paint and lead-based paint products in 1978. In 1991, the government adopted a nationwide ban on lead shot in migratory waterfowl hunting after biologists estimated 2 million ducks died each year from ingesting spent lead pellets. So, a win for us. That affects all of us. It's something to really keep, you know, a lot of us don't keep up with national news and stories. It's something we need to keep up with. Another one, this is from the, I believe it's come from the Outdoor Wire again, which is a great one. If you like outdoor news, it's a free subscription to the Outdoor Wire. Comes through, I think, three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, maybe. Great story, and a lot of them don't apply. I mean, a lot of them apply to a lot of states other than South Carolina, but it's interesting stuff to read. This one, Hunter's Venison donations provide 11 million meals to needy. The National Shooting Sports did a study, and for food banks nationwide, acquiring protein is a challenge because of the high cost of meat. Fortunately, during hunting season, hunters helped make up the shortfall with generous donations of protein-rich, low-fat venison that provide 11 million meals annually to the less fortunate. That's a lot of meals. They estimate that an estimated 2.8 million pounds of game meat makes its way each year to food pantries, church kitchens, and shelters, and onto the plates of those in need. Quote here from Peter Aldrich of Hunt to Feed in Connecticut, without venison, some of these organizations would not have protein, wouldn't have meat to give those folks that are coming in. With one deer able to feed up to 200 people, it's easy to see how important donations of hunter-harvested venison are to charitable food providers. Last year in Missouri, for example, 4,500 hunters donated more than 227,000 pounds of venison through a state program. And if you're not involved in Hunters for the Hungry, you'd like to get involved. It's a great cause. I know some hunt clubs who, as one of their rules, they donate some of their meat to Hunters Feeding the Hungry. Not a bad way to give back to the community a natural resource that's everybody's, whether you are able to, you know, get out there and enjoy it or not. I got a little funny thing. I ran across this. Where white men went wrong. Indian chief Two Eagles was asked by a white U.S. government official, you have observed the white man for 90 years. You've seen his wars and his technological advances. You've seen his progress and the damage he's done. The chief nodded slowly in agreement. The official continued, considering all these events, in your opinion, where did the white man go wrong? The chief stared at the government official and replied, when white man find land, Indians running it, no taxes, no debt, plenty buffalo, plenty beaver, clean water, women did all the work, medicine man free. Indian man spend all day hunting and fishing. Why change it? So I thought that was funny. We are a fully involved family in the National Archery and School Program now. I've got a short little bit here on why five reasons to teach your kids archery. I'm going to skip it because we're running up against the end of the program. I know it's mid-year and a lot of these seasons are winding down. If you got a kid, a National Archery and School Program is a great thing. Check into it and I'll get to these because it's some really good points for archery, even if you don't get involved, even if you just shoot in your backyard. If you're a new listener to this show or just wonder why we always end up with a Chuck Norris joke, here's the backstory. The whole Metz clan was sitting around the table for birthdays or something early last summer, and my niece Lindsay told a Chuck joke. And we started talking about all the ones that are out there. Then we started pulling up on our phones, and you know, in a few minutes, we were all rolling around the floor laughing and crying. So Chuck is thanks to a suggestion from my niece Lindsay for ending each show. Chuck Norris has a grizzly bear carpet in his living room. The bear's not dead. It's just too afraid to move. Next week is a sneak peek into what we're going to be doing this year, places I'm going to be, topics we'll discuss, guests we'll be having on the show. I started out one morning writing down ideas. I quit when I had 80. Those that don't make it this year will go into next year. I know we're going to have one special guest with his own segment, at least until September. You've heard him here before. Great one. And I'm also going to be bringing on a guest host for some shows. He brings a passion of his own for the outdoors in the studio, and I hope you'll enjoy it. There's James. That's all for the first Saturday of 2015. Start planning those outdoor trips now. Get them on the calendar. Remember to be careful when you're out there. Make some memories. Above all, don't forget that camera. Talk with you again next week.
WGTK FM, Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson. Conservative Talk, 94.5.